continue the conversation at dannymorell.com/awakenyou. New York Times bestselling author Matthew Hussey. I got to ask you a question. In 30 seconds or less, why should they listen to this episode and stay till the absolute end of it?
Wow, big question. I hope they'll hear something that feels genuinely original and different that they can apply to their love lives, their confidence. You know, I think that Martin Amis said the worst thing anyone can do in writing is write cliche. And I hope that in my work that it's anything but cliche. And if people stay, they'll realize it's there's always an unexpected turn or an unexpected idea that will help people that they won't find somewhere else.
I love that. How did you start in this work? What was that moment that made you say, like, this is what I want to do?
It's funny. I was very young when I was about 11 years old when I picked up How to Win Friends and Influence People off of my dad's bookshelf. And I got hooked on this idea that you could learn how to come across better. It was like a big deal for me. I was a shy and introverted kid. So the idea that you could actually learn things that would allow you to have more impact in life was a revelation for me. And that kind of took me down a self-development rabbit hole at a very young age. And a friend of mine, his dad used to take his whole company to Tony Robbins in England, which Tony Robbins used to come to this big event center called the XL Center in London. Huge place. And he used to pack out like 10,000 people events.
Wow.
And his dad said, look, you have to come, but you can bring a friend. And I was that friend that he took along with him. And that very quickly kind of, I got inspired on a new level because all these books I was reading, then I was able to marry them with this kind of delivery on stage that I thought was extraordinary. I'd never seen any of my teachers at school present like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it began a path for me of, I didn't know what I was going to do. I just knew this feels exciting to me. I'm learning. I loved what I was learning. I couldn't get enough of it. And then in my late teens, early 20s, I started working with people, men actually, in the beginning, not women. I started working with them in helping them become a little more confident in their love lives.
I noticed that when you first started, I caught this right away, you said love life and confidence.
Yeah.
Like, how for you do both of them like work together, and what about those two words and those parts of our life cause you to look at them and working together basically?
Well, there are so many things that we do in our love life that are a result of either a lack of self-worth or a lack of acceptance of ourselves and inability to overcome past patterns or to even realize that we have past patterns that are shaping all of our decisions about who we choose, who we invest time in. And so for me, I got to a point where I realized you can help people with competence, but your competence can only go so far if your confidence won't rise to meet it. You won't, they're like two ladders, and you can't, you can reach up on competence, but if your confidence won't come up to meet it, then you're going to keep finding yourself in situations where you don't feel good enough. You feel like you're going to get found out. You're pretending to be something you're not. As I very early in my life as a coach, I used to say to women, look, if you think you're old fashioned and that's why you don't make the move, then you're not old fashioned, because old fashioned is dropping the handkerchief in front of a guy and then you keep walking, mm-hmm. and the guy picks it up, brings it over to you and says, madam, you dropped this. He thinks it was his idea to approach you, but you chose him by dropping the handkerchief. And the whole reason I started talking about that idea was because I wanted women to have more choice in their love lives. And in my mind, I was like, if I can just get them to drop the handkerchief more, I know I can get them more choice in their love lives. And if they have more choice, they'll make better decisions. But the thing that I didn't account for was the confidence aspect, that even if you have more choice, if you're still continuously drawn to the wrong kinds of people, the wrong kinds of behavior, then even with more options, you'll still gravitate towards people who disrespect you, who don't invest in you, who treat you poorly, who take you for granted. And you won't think that, you'll either think that's normal because that's your pattern and you know, you've that's all you've ever known, or you won't think you're worthy of more, or both. So for me, confidence has to be a huge part of the conversation, because otherwise, no matter how many tools we have, we'll find ourselves consistently gravitating towards the wrong people's and the wrong behavior.
Yeah, I get that. Could you give me an example of, you know, maybe a typical example of how a lack of confidence has us stuck in the type of relationship that we don't want to be in?
Well, anytime someone says, I'm not ready, or I don't know if I want a relationship, but we keep going back to that person anyway, and we keep complaining that, you know, I just wish they were ready. I wish they wanted something real with me.
Or that they would change.
They would change.
Right.
And it's, we're prepared to talk about how much it's upsetting us, but we're not prepared to walk away. That to me is where a lack of confidence shows up. And it's a lack of trust that we'll be able to find something new, that we'll be able to find something better, or that we're worthy of something better.
It's so true, Matthew. It's so true. I say all the time in my relationship with Jen, like, I'm so confident in who I am and she's so confident in who she is, that we are not together because of a need. Mm-hmm. We're together because we love each other. Do you think that confidence opens the doorway to real love? And what I mean by that is, do you think in your work that when you are finally confident in who you are and who you're not, in what you want and what you don't want, in what you'll accept and what you won't accept, do you think that that being choice is what could potentially actually open you to real love versus being in a relationship based off of a trauma bond or a subconscious need that you don't realize?
100%.
Yeah.
I don't think, if you don't, you know, how many of us, I know when I was dating for a long time, I wasn't really vulnerable. And it was a big part of that was because I hadn't accepted parts of myself. I was still beating myself up for things in my life. I was worried that there were parts of me that were unlovable. I was worried that if I wasn't this sort of character that I was playing, which wasn't entirely a character, there were parts of it that were me, but it was like I was only doing that. I wasn't doing anything else. I was just being this one part of me.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was afraid that if I was something other than that, then I wouldn't be attractive or wouldn't be loved. And so that held me back, because it held me back from real connections. I was with people that adored me. Some of the people I was with really adored me, but they didn't really fully know me because I wasn't entirely myself and I wasn't entirely vulnerable. And there were pieces of me that I always held back. And I didn't realize at the time I was holding them back. If you'd have asked me at the time, I would have been like, I'm vulnerable, I'm myself, whatever. But I didn't, you know, I still feel like there were levels of me that I just was too afraid to bring forward. And you know, I'd had it backfire as well. I had a relationship where I shared an insecurity one night, and it didn't go well. This person said it was really unattractive. And it like really shut me down, because in my mind at that point, I was like, I'm never doing that again.
Yeah.
That's like, that I thought that was like the root of, like, I thought I was going to say this and it was going to, you know, I keep being told this is a route to real connection. And it, my worst fear was confirmed that if I say this out loud, this person's going to think I am unattractive. And I literally had those words said to me. So it really shut me down for a minute. And I can see how people take that with them into their whole lives. Because if that happens to you enough, you're like, I, you know, screw this. I don't want to be like this anymore. I don't want to open myself up to that kind of pain. So I definitely think the confidence to truly accept yourself and be who you really are, all of the parts of yourself, is what allows someone to truly love you. But it's also what opens you up to a different level of rejection.
For sure. Do you think that part of that confidence, I find this so fascinating, because everything that you're saying resonates so true with me. Ultimately, like, when I attracted Jen, she made me come face to face with, like, the deepest parts of my confidence or lack thereof, you know? Mm-hmm. And the parts of me where I thought, I got it all figured out, I'm a confident guy, whatever the case may be, there was still more. There was still a lot more. And that's sometimes the beauty in true relationship, is that it's that medicine that you didn't think that you needed.
I think sometimes we feel like we're confident when we are operating comfortably within our circle of competence. You know, there's one of the things I talk about in the new book is that there are three levels of confidence. There's the surface level, the identity level, and the core. The surface level is the way we walk, talk, and act, how we come across to the rest of the world on the surface. The identity level is all the things that we kind of base our confidence on. Not at the core. The core is much, much deeper, and we can talk about that. But at the identity level, it's all the sources of our confidence. So for some people, it's the house they live in. It's the fact that they play an instrument, or they speak two languages, or they've achieved a lot in their career, or they're well-read, or they're good-looking, or whatever it may be. They have a big circle of friends. We all have different sources of confidence. And when those things are going well for us, the areas we derive most of our confidence from, it gives the illusion of us being a very, very confident person at all levels, because we kind of have the wind at our back and we feel pretty good. Like, our, you know, our identity feels strong. The problem is when someone asks you to operate in another area, like someone asks you to now switch from this identity to something else, and to operate in an area where you don't feel like you're naturally good at it, or it's something that you've built up as a source of identity. And that's where a lot of us feel like our confidence quickly falls apart, because now we're off road, so to speak. And now we don't feel as sure-footed in those places.
It's impossible for you to have a successful relationship with another human being or a partner if you don't have a successful relationship with yourself. And what we as human beings don't realize is that we are deeply disconnected. We're disconnected from Mother Earth. We're disconnected from peace. We're disconnected from love. What we do at Awaken is we curate different exercises to help you reconnect first to yourself, and then the beautiful process of reconnecting to everybody begins. And that's why Awaken is so powerful. You'll do more in 3 days at Awaken than you would do 30 years anywhere else.
I was so stuck, and now I feel peace.
Awaken has been the best thing we have done for our marriage.
Coming here, I realized that the answers were inside of me all the time.
Head on over to DannyMorrell.com/awaken now to get your tickets today.
I remember it so, this is so, you know, you're both from London. I remember the first time I was going to London to meet, you know, Jen's family, how, you know, I don't get very, you could put me in front of 10,000 people, I don't get nervous. But in that little party, in that gathering, I was nervous.
What do you think it was for you?
Yeah, I think number one, culturally, you know, culturally, it was like a big difference for me, you know? I talk a lot about this, but especially here in the US, in the UK, I don't feel this to be this way, but because it's like a hotbed for so many different people. But in the US, as you're growing up, especially like I grew up in poverty, we didn't have anything. So you're always made to feel like because you're a different color skin that you're a minority here, you know? And so that was so deeply ingrained in me that, you know, it's so true what you say. I always only dated like in that minority group.
Right.
It's where I felt comfortable. And then all of a sudden I meet her and she's something completely different from a different part of the world. And now I got to fly over there and I got to meet her family. It was way out of my comfort zone.
Yeah.
You know, and I meditated and I grounded and, you know, obviously it's so true what you're saying is I'm a pretty confident guy, but that for me was, that was something underneath that I wasn't aware of.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's pretty crazy.
It is. And it's a kind of, I think the more we can be a person who continues to be willing to step into those rooms that make us feel that way and that make us feel uncomfortable, the more what we think of as home just expands. You know, I try to look at life that way. You know, I went to a couple of years ago in 2019, I think it was. No, maybe it was early 2020. I went to do this retreat with Wim Hof and a group of guys out in Poland and do cold exposure therapy in the height of winter. And I never associated with being good with the cold. Like that wasn't part of my identity, wasn't I'm really good when it comes to cold weather. If anything, it was the opposite. Like I had circulation issues. My fingers would go yellow when I was like in the cold for too long. I always remember that at school. Like it just, I hated it. And I got invited. I was in a difficult period of my life and I got invited by a friend of mine to go and do this exclusive experience. And
was that the one with Lewis House?
Yeah.
I remember seeing that. Wow, that's a good group of guys right there.
That's right. I was in that group.
Okay, that's awesome.
And that, by the way, that group of guys was in itself intimidating.
I get that.
Because it was just a group of super athletes and endurance runners and an Olympic gold medalist and an NFL football winning, you know, champion. And it was like just these freaks. And then, you know, I'm going with that group to Poland in the height of
winter. On top of the cold.
On top of it. So now I'm in this crazy peer group and I'm going to be doing these, you know, jumping off of cliffs into frozen lakes and trekking up a mountain shirtless in the snow for 4 hours and doing 10-minute ice baths and like all this stuff that it freaked me out. And I remember texting my friend Lewis to be like, I texted him like a day before because I hadn't really researched it. He just invited me and I was in a tough moment where I was like already I was going through a hard time in life and I felt like I needed something. So I was like kind of feeling a little crazy and I went, yeah, I'll come without even thinking about it. And then I looked it up and the day before I was like, Lewis, I don't know about this. I've just seen what this is.
This is like, legit. This
doesn't look safe. Like right. What? And I ended up, he was like, okay, let me know, whatever. And I was like,
don't be a little bitch. I gotta go.
I have to do this, you know? And I went. And the whole thing from start to finish was nothing about it really lent itself towards areas of my identity confidence that I already felt really good in, you know? Like, other than just grit, I knew I had grit, but outside of that, I was like, none of this feels within my area of competence. And my friend Karen Rinaldi, who's actually the same, but she's published this book. She's a longtime friend, but she wrote a book of her own called It's Great to Suck at Something. And
that's a great title.
It's a great title. And this particular book basically talks all about what the merits of doing things that we're not good at or don't even know that we'll ever be good at. Like, you know, it's easy to do something if you think you're already, like, if you think I'm going to be good at this, or do something where you feel like I could get better at this. Like, if I keep going, I'm going to get really good. But sometimes when we just are bad at something, like, it's like if you can't sing, like, but you just do it anyway. That takes guts. Because now it's not like I'm going to get really good. It's just, no, I'm just going to do it knowing that I suck.
Right.
And sit in the feelings that creates and be okay with it and learn to play in that space. And I really went into that thing with that in mind. I was like, you know what? This is good for me. This isn't about going and being first in class in this cold retreat in Poland. This is about just going and being the guy who's prepared to do something he's not good at. Because most of us, including myself, spend most of our lives doing things we know we'll be good at. And so we feel so deeply uncomfortable being pulled into something else. And I've tried to really, as much as I can, make a habit of just being okay in these new spaces. And the more we can do that, the more it's like we expand our definition of home. So for me now, when I go to someone's house and they, you know, they've got a cold plunge in the back garden, it's like fun for me. I'm like, oh, that's play. Because I, you know, I've been there, I've done that, I get it. Like, that's play for me now.
Right.
And there was a time where it viscerally would have made me scared. So that to me is one of the great joys of life. But I think it's encouraging people to create, like I in the book, I have this whole exercise where I draw with people what I call an identity matrix. And inside that matrix, you put all of the squares, like a big box, and inside you have all the smaller boxes, like a tic-tac-toe box that has all of these different sources of confidence. And I get people to draw what theirs would look like. And I, as a fun exercise, I show people what mine looked like at 21 versus what mine looks like now, and how the composition of where I get my confidence from has changed quite dramatically. Mm-hmm. One of the things that's often very, very apparent when people do this exercise is that there is a one or two very dominant squares within their matrix that most of their confidence comes from. And it becomes quite dangerous because when you're, if, for example, if that big square for someone is their work.
And work is gone.
And something happens to that part of their life,
you're in trouble.
The business starts to go flat or this, then all of a sudden, it's not just my business is hurting right now, it's my whole identity is coming into question.
Yeah.
And so this whole exercise, you know, I say to people, whatever you got validated for, your validations become your mutations. And if you're not careful, your mutations become what started as your greatest source of strength becomes your greatest vulnerability. So we have to be prepared to diversify our matrix and create new squares. The only way to create new squares is to invest in boxes that right now don't really give you a sense of significance or identity.
I get that.
Because you haven't, by definition, they're not giving it to you now because you haven't invested in them. And you haven't invested in them because you probably don't feel as confident or as comfortable there.
And the way this, I love this, and the way this all ties back into relationships is the more confident and comfortable that you can get in all of these squares, which is essentially yourself, the less likely you are to be in a relationship where you're not being seen, you're not being heard, your needs are not being met, or you're constantly waiting for that person to authenticate, you know, your feelings.
Well, I think the danger is that if you don't have these squares in place in your life already, then someone comes in and they instantly become the person you fall for, instantly becomes the giant square in your matrix.
Ah, got it.
And now that you know, most of your confidence on the identity level is coming from this relationship. It's coming from this person.
Now we're talking here.
Yeah. Now, you can't be yourself in that relationship because the stakes are so impossibly high because you go, I cannot lose this person. So I'll do anything to keep them. And if you'll do anything to keep someone, then you're already beginning the process of becoming less yourself. You stop having boundaries. You stop, you know, asking for what you really want or need. You stop expressing yourself. You start trying to chameleonize yourself to whatever you think is going to make them happy or impress them. All because you feel like you can't afford to lose them, because you haven't got strong sources of identity outside of the relationship. Now, look, we all get heartbroken and hurt when an important square in our matrix gets taken away. But whether that loss is something that you can weather or whether it's catastrophic depends on how strong the rest of your matrix is. And so, you know, we all, one of those instincts a lot of us have, and this is a very human thing, but one of the instincts a lot of us have when we really like someone is, nothing else in my life matters now. Like, this is all that matters. And we pour ourselves into this person. But then, because we've done that, we start losing all of the sources of our identity elsewhere. And when we do that, all of a sudden, we're now like, well, I can't lose this person because I now don't really have anything else that I base my identity on. So then we're back into, you can't have an authentic connection or real love because you're just being whatever you think that person needs you to be in order to make them happy. You're no longer really expressing yourself. It's one of the great kind of paradoxes is that actually the best way to make an amazing relationship is to know that you can survive outside of it.
It's to make an amazing you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that. I love that. One of the promises of the book is how to raise your standards. Mm. And the second one is find your person. Talk to me about that.
Well, the again, we are so used to saying, how do I get this person to like me? But how do I... One of the great ways to be attractive to someone is to have standards, because people then realize what we have to offer isn't free. There is an entry price to that. And too many of us, when we like someone, especially if we've been single for a long time or we've struggled to meet someone and we think nothing better is going to come along, when we like someone, we just go into the mode of, I'll do anything to keep them or to see them or to, you know, I'll go to their part of town. If they keep inviting me over to their house, I'll just keep going, even though it's a half hour drive for me and they never come to my side of town. Or that person didn't message me for 5 days since the last date and that kind of hurt my feelings and I wanted to hear from them. But then they message me a day later on a Saturday and say, what's going on? What are you up to today? And all of a sudden I jump because I'm excited that they've reached out to me. This is what not having standards looks like. And it feels to us like not having standards is almost like a shortcut to proximity. That if I just don't make waves, and if I can just keep getting closer to this person, then they'll start getting really attached and they'll see my value and I'll become indispensable to them. And then all of a sudden, I'll have this amazing thing with them and they'll commit and they'll start really investing. And it's a trap, because someone seeing that we have standards around the time that we give, the energy we give, the intimacy we give, that's part of what makes someone see us as valuable. What makes someone see us as someone who they have to actually invest in. So it's a very counterintuitive thing. And what I talk about in the book is, what does it actually look like to have standards? How do you actually express your standards? And one of the biggest ways we express our standards is through being willing to have hard conversations. You have to be willing at the moment that something happens that you don't like or appreciate, you have to be willing to actually talk about it, to express that. Most people don't, because they're either afraid, they don't know how to express things, they're going to say it wrong, they don't like confrontation, or if I actually ask for what I need, it's going to scare this person away. So we're right back to the same problem, that I'm more worried about scaring someone away than I am about getting the thing that I actually want, which is a happy, peaceful relationship of equals.
So if you've been listening to my podcast, you know I'm a strong believer and proponent of plant medicine's ability to awaken your mind, body, and soul. And many of you have asked me where I recommend going to experience the power of these medicines. And the only place on planet Earth I would ever recommend is Reunion. It's a not-for-profit healing center with over 30 years of experience in Costa Rica, which I trust wholeheartedly. I'm honored to have aligned with them to create the Higher Self Scholarship Fund. So $100 from every booking from our community goes into this fund, and we will award the fund to someone like you every couple of months. So help me help others by using the code DANNYREUNION when registering. The link to register can be found in the podcast notes, or you can learn more by going to reunionexperience.org. And so thinking of all of this and combining the confidence aspect, which I can totally relate, the standards aspect, which I can totally relate to as well. How does one, you know, I know how I describe it, I know how I teach it, but how does one go about finding their person?
We have to start by first understanding what hasn't worked for us in the past. So everyone has had relationships where they really wanted someone, they were really into someone, but there was something fundamental they weren't getting from that person. So let's say in your last relationship, what you didn't have was someone who really was honest, or they weren't loyal, or they didn't have your back, or they didn't ever make you feel seen or empathize with you. Or they were never present. You know, you barely ever saw them. We have to look back at those relationships and say, what was the thing that was missing that made it impossible for me to be happy? Even if I was desperately clinging onto it because I wanted it so badly, what was missing that made it impossible for me to be happy? And let's say what was missing was someone who actually cared about the relationship on the level that you did, where they were willing to show up, or they were willing to be consistent, or they were willing to invest in you. You have to decide right now that no relationship ever again is going to be worth it. No matter how sexy someone is, no matter how, you know, much I think they're impressive or charismatic, or I like their lifestyle or whatever it is. No one can be so impressive that it makes you forget that when you didn't have that thing, your life was miserable. Because when you know that, now no one has any power over you, because you make that your first kind of standard, is I have to have this or nothing else matters.
Yeah.
So that gives you a standard on the way in to any new situation. And it what it will mean is you don't get sidetracked.
You know what? Can I say something?
Please.
I'm thinking, this is so interesting. I love the way that you articulate things, right? Because it's just helping me to, on a granular level, understand like relationships, which is, it's really beautiful. But the thing that I didn't have in my last relationship, as you're bringing this up, was the ability to communicate, accept responsibility, and find peace after an argument. So I remember as I was looking for my next relationship, I thought, no, in my mind, I thought, no matter what, I want peace. I want the ability, right? Things are going to happen. I want the ability to get back into peace where both of us can see and acknowledge the parts and the roles that we played. And if I don't have that, I don't want anything. Mm. And it's literally exactly what you're saying right now. And the testimony is that is exactly what I have now. So there's some real truth to this. Thank you for sharing this.
Of course. Thanks for being vulnerable and giving that example, because it's powerful. Because attractive people can come along, like really attractive people, people who like threaten to distract you from that truth. And you always have to keep that truth in your mind, because that's the thing that makes you go, no one can be attractive enough that it distracts me from that. And you have to, that's why you have to keep a very strong memory of that in your mind and how unhappy it made you. because it can make you realize, oh, that robbed me of my peace in a way that made it impossible for me to be happy in that situation. So this becomes something that is just the price of entry for any situation. So that knowledge is really powerful. Then it's finding your person becomes, okay, am I, and by the way, let me just say this, because what that allows you to do is say no to the wrong people faster. And this is kind of a way of looking at finding your person, but a key step to finding your person faster is saying no to the wrong people quicker.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So when you're doing that, you're already putting yourself on a kind of fast track. It feels like you're going slower, because what you don't have when you date someone who's not quite right, or they make you unhappy, but you still are dating someone, you have a story to tell everyone about how there's something going on in your love life. But when you say no to that person because it feels wrong, you don't have a story to tell about your love life. Someone says, how's it going? You go, there's no one in my life right now. It feels like you're going slower, but you're going faster. You're just not burning all of this time and energy.
That's right.
On the wrong people. So then you have to be taking opportunities, like actually putting yourself in environments where things can happen. And that's just some of the basic stuff of putting yourself in rooms, communities, or online dating, doesn't matter where you can actually meet people. But starting to tune in to the kind of energy you really want in your life. Like, what do I actually want now? Like, for me, the big difference with my wife, Audrey, was I felt at home. Like, I felt I could really, it made me more of myself. And that to me was like, I felt like it was almost easy to ignore, because in the very beginning, there were elements of Audrey that didn't feel like, you know, home to me for a long time felt like, you know, chaos, or it felt like push-pull, or it felt like something else, you know? And my wiring was kind of set up for that frenetic energy in my love life. I was like, I dated like a drug addict, you know, just chasing a high, chasing a feeling, chasing it. And that, you know, I remember when it felt more peaceful, it didn't connect with me in the same way.
Sit well with you. Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I think that's true for a lot of people, is we chase the wrong thing over and over again.
That's right.
And we don't know what the right thing feels like. And when the right thing comes along, it feels strange, it feels a little alien to us, a little disconcerting. For some, it can even feel boring.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, oh, this isn't love. This isn't chemistry. This isn't, like, it's hard for people to identify it. But that's why I think if you're trying to find your person, one of the big words that I'm in love with is curiosity. It's you, right now, we have our experience that we've lived our entire life and probably played out many times. And it's hard to believe that something else could exist for us, that there's another way of being. And I'm not a big believer in, you know, just believe in something new, because I certainly don't have the capability of just believing in something new. My beliefs tend to be founded on reference points. I need to have an experience that gives me a new reality or a new way of experiencing the world. And that then makes me go, oh my God, there's another way of being than the way I've been my whole life. But in order to get a new experience, you have to be curious about something that's outside of your own experience. And I would look for, in my life, one of the ways I've built new beliefs is looking for experiences that are outside of my normal experience and sitting in them for a little bit. Like a friend of mine, she was dating a guy right after a guy that had treated her poorly, really, really poorly. And she started dating a guy who treated her nice, like was a kind man, funny, like attractive, but really like simple, wasn't complicated. And she went home and she said, her mum asked her how it was going. And she said, it's so strange, mum. He's He's so nice to me. And her mom said, that's how it's supposed to be. And she was, what was great about her is she sat with that for long enough that her nervous system calmed down.
Yeah.
And she began to realize like, oh, this is where it's really at. But sometimes we have to get through that period where it doesn't feel like what we know before we can realize this is where it's really at. It's like, you know what it's like? It's like getting a, it's like trying to get someone who's just come off of drugs to appreciate a sunset. Like if you've been on drugs every day for the last 4 years of your life, and then on the day you quit, someone sits you in front of a sunset and says, appreciate that.
Yeah, yeah. Breathe, take it all in.
The person's like,
they'll be twitching.
What are you talking about? This is the most boring thing I've seen. Like, there's nothing exciting about this because their chemistry, their nervous system is wired for that high. And obviously they're used to those corresponding lows, but then when they get that high, it feels, that's living. Now, a sunset's amazing, awe-inspiring, majestic. When you really connect to a sunset and you sit there and you're present with it, you go, oh my God.
Yeah.
It's incredible. But it's not cocaine. It's not heroin. It's right. Not, you know, it's not MDMA. It's like, it's a sunset. It's a different feeling. Much more valuable. But not the same. And if you're trying to, like, in the beginning, I think the big thing is like people want a sunset to feel like the drug. And they feel cheated. Like if it doesn't, it's like, well, I should go back to that thing. And it's like, no, it's a different feeling. But if you learn to exist in that feeling, your life's going to be so much better. And you're going to start to relish the more subtle, but far more profound connection and enjoyment and happiness that's going to come from this other experience. And I think that there's something very analogous to relationships for people there. Because I think a lot of people have been used to the highs and the lows and the just, you know, all the emotions and the spikes that come with that, the things that a lot of people call passion or chemistry. And it takes our nervous system calming down and actually getting kind of addicted to a new kind of feeling.
For sure.
But that takes time, and it takes a little bravery too, to give up the old thing and to say, I'm going to find something better. And I think one of the ways we do that is we have to look around at other people who have found different kinds of relationships than maybe the ones we're engaged in, and just get curious. Why? You know, I used to be not like to a terrible degree, but I used to like suffer from jealousy a little bit. You know, like I remember times in my life where feeling jealous just really could ruin my day. And I remember a couple of people I knew, one of my cousin, he and his wife have an amazing relationship, enviable relationship, just so beautiful, so connected, so in love, so peaceful. And they would never get jealous. Not really, like not in any real meaningful way. And whenever I saw someone that was achieving that kind of like, oh, they don't get jealous the way I am, or they don't get this the way I am, whatever it was, it can apply to everything. I would ask dumb questions. I'd be like, so why don't you get jealous? Like, what is that? And what about this situation? If this happened, and I'd like try and come up with a scenario that would make me jealous. If this happened, how would you react to that? Well, I guess I would think this, and I would ask them this, and I'd be like, oh, they go where I go left.
They go right.
They go right. And I would realize this is a relationship that I think is an amazing relationship. It's not like I'm listening to people whose opinions I don't respect. They have an amazing relationship. So there's something for me to get from this. And then when I realized where our minds departed, I would realize where my pain was coming from and why I was producing one result and they were producing another result. So that curiosity was for me like one of my greatest assets. And, you know, I think this is what I'm getting at in this book is that we have deeper wiring that is derailing us and making it hard for us to find our person. And when we understand those deeper reasons, which this book is designed to be a co-pilot for you, helping you figure those things out, all of a sudden, doesn't matter what results you've got so far in your love life, a whole other reality becomes possible. Because you realize your past doesn't have to equal your future in this area. Your past is just a reflection of a certain cycle, a certain pattern, a certain way you're wired right now that you really can break free from. And when you do, it's like it's so much becomes available to you. It's like seeing 1,000 different realities you can choose from. And your reality you've been in that you've told yourself was life wasn't life. It was just your very specific reality, which, by the way, deserves compassion from you because it's not your fault that that's your reality. I really believe that. You know, you've been through things, you've experienced things, and they've made it really hard for you to have a different reality. But we can challenge that at any age and find a different kind of love than we've ever had before.
Absolutely, we can. And that is available to all of us.
Yeah.
I love that. How do people get your book?
There's a, it's available everywhere, any bookstore or Amazon. But we have a cool thing that we're doing right now for anyone who goes to lovelifebook.com. You can both order it there from any of those links. It has all Amazon, Barnes and Noble and everything. But when you do, come back, grab your confirmation number from your order, wherever you got it from, and come back to that page, lovelifebook.com. Because on the 4th of May, I'm doing a live virtual event called Find Your Person. And it's just for book buyers. There's no, you know, you can't buy a ticket to this event. It's literally only happening once and it's only available to everyone who buys a book. And that event is a beautiful accompaniment to the book because you'll read the book and learn about yourself and how to find love and raise your standards and be happy on the path there because you can't defer your happiness until you find love. But when you combine it with that event, you'll also have me live coaching you at this event, which is going to be a really, really fun time. And I'm super excited. So all of that is at lovelifebook.com.
I love that. Thank you. And congratulations. Cause I think thanks, this is going to be wonderful.
I'm excited, man. Thanks for having me. I really, really appreciate it.
Thanks for being here. Yeah. That's it for this week's episode of The Higher Self. I would highly recommend, as a matter of fact, for all of you and Awaken You, we will make this, we'll make this the book of the month in March.
Thank you.
In April. And I recommend all of you get it because I can just say from myself listening to you, you have a way of explaining things that I think is going to unlock a lot of, you know, hidden secrets and a lot of shadows in people's life that will help them find themselves one step closer to true love.
So thanks, Denny.
Yeah, thank you for being here. We'll see you next week on The Higher Self.